The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, and welcome to the Big Blue Review. I am Dan Pizzuta. I am joined here with Chris Flum, and you are going to be with us as we try to figure out what just happened in a 33-31 loss to the Carolina Panthers. Looking at it right now, I don't have a lot of answers. That was one of the craziest back and forth games, especially in the fourth quarter, that I've seen in quite a while. Chris, do you know what happened?
No.
All right.
That was a crazy game. I was just saying off air that this was probably the first time my heart has really been pounding at the end of a Giants game since, I think, if not in 2016, then probably since before Tom Coughlin left. That was just wild.
Yeah, wild is a pretty good word to describe it. I mean, even coming down to that last drive, Carolina is facing that third and one. They, for some reason, run inside zone with McCaffrey. I'm still not totally sure McCaffrey got the first down there. I was convinced they spiked the ball on fourth down instead of it being first.
Me too. I don't think Fox even updated their graphics.
I don't think they did. I think they showed fourth, but I guess the refs had said it was a first down. Yeah. They let it go. I think Pat Shurmur, after the game in his press conference, and that's probably something we'll talk about a little later, he said, you know, with the rules, that's out of his hand. That's inside 2 minutes. He couldn't do anything about that to have them take a look at it. But I don't know. Somehow Carolina, with no timeouts left, was playing for a really long field goal. You don't expect any team to play for that field goal. You definitely don't expect any team to make that field goal. So 63 yards from Graham Gano was what clinched it here for a 33-31 final. And I'm looking at a table right now from Chase Stewart from Football Perspective. Graham Gano became the sixth kicker in NFL history to hit a 60-plus yard game-winning field goal.
Two of them, the second against the Giants.
Yep. Yeah. The Giants. The Giants are the only team to have two of them against them. And it's happened in back-to-back years. A week three last year, Jake Elliott and the Eagles was 61. And this was 63. And it tied the record for the longest game-winning kick.
At this point, I'm pretty much convinced that if a team wanted to try a 90-yard game-winning field goal, it might have to be in Denver, but it would work if it was the Giants and time was expiring.
Man, I was watching that just thinking, all right, there's no way this is going in. And then it goes up and you're kind of watching.
It starts bending to the right and straightens out.
Yeah. I think we can get into this a little bit. I'd talk about the Panthers. I have no idea what they were doing just like all game. In the beginning of the game, like the first half and into the third quarter, Cam Newton was averaging like 11 yards per attempt, and the Panthers would come out and be like, run, 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 pass was like their game plan coming out. I did not understand that at all. And then that whole last drive, man. Carolina did, I think, everything they could have to lose that game on that final drive and still came out with a win.
Yeah. Incredible. The Giants just happened to do a little bit more to lose the game in the first half. It was almost like the game was a contest to see who could shoot themselves in the foot more.
It definitely felt like that at a lot of points during the game. It really felt like one team was going, hey, you know what? We really don't want to win this one. And then the other team got the ball and was like, yeah, but we really don't either. So like, just go ahead.
You win. No, you win.
It felt like that for a little bit. And then at the end, I had the Giants coming up with big touchdowns. You had Carolina coming up with the open pass to Christian McCaffrey at the start of the fourth quarter. You have the Giants come back with a 33-yard pass from Manning to Beckham with just over 8 minutes remaining. Then it comes down to the wire. You have the Barkley catch and run for the 15-yard touchdown and the lead and with 1:15.
The Superman leap.
Yeah, which right now, it looks like Barkley is okay. He came up a little short after he landed. Looked like he was limping off. Pat Shurmur said he was fine. He was walking around. That was definitely scary for a little bit. Everything seems to be all right. And then Barkley scores there, and you think, okay, the Giants just kind of need to hold him. They're up by a couple. Only a field goal is going to beat him. And Carolina plays for they played for a 63-yard field goal. Like, that was their plan at the end of the game. And they still won. I
suppose you could say fortune favors the bold, but
man, that wasn't even bold. That was just bad. Yeah. That was bad planning the whole time. Oh, so now that we've kind of talked through that and kind of maybe processed what happened, I guess we can go through maybe in a little more detail of what happened in this game. But I think to really get into what happened in the game, I think we kind of have to talk about what happened before it. And the Odell Beckham interview went up on Sunday NFL Countdown on ESPN just before the game. And you know that got a lot of attention. You have someone of Beckham's caliber just saying things just like, yeah, I'm not really sure what the offense is doing, and I'm not always being put in position to do everything I can to make plays. And
saying the things we've all been thinking.
Yeah, yeah. So I think,
or in our case, been saying.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think he's definitely saying things we have said on this podcast, and they're things that weren't necessarily untrue. And I think if you watch the full video, and please do, it's like 6.5, maybe 7 minutes. It's on ESPN.com. It's on YouTube. Just watch the whole thing instead of just reading clips and quotes that are just taken out of context. When he says, I don't know about whether there's a problem with the quarterback, he goes into a much longer answer that when the whole quote is used, like it's nowhere near as bad as a lot of people wanted to make him. It sounds like a guy who was frustrated with the offense. We've been frustrated with the offense. And when you get down to it, the Giants did what Beckham wanted in this game. They did what we wanted in this game. They threw the ball deep. They took some shots, and it worked. This is the best the offense has looked easily this season. Even, I think, better than the Houston game. Eli averaged 9.1 yards per attempt. His average pass was 10.7 yards down the field. His average pass was 1.3 yards past the sticks. He had not thrown an average pass past the sticks yet this season. We got a more aggressive offense, and it worked. They scored 30 points for the first time in 84 years.
They should have won. If they made maybe one fewer mistake in the first half, or, well, we'll get to the officials in due course because there's plenty to go over there. If the ball had bounced just slightly different at one point in the game, they should have won. If a 63-yard field goal does what a 63-yard field goal attempt is supposed to do, they would have won.
Right. I think you look at all these metrics and pretty much all of them say the Giants should have won this game. They held Cam Newton to 6.8 yards per attempt, but a 27.8 QBR. And remember, we talked about last week that QBR, when looked at as like a win probability stat, is really good. Also, QBR is way better than normal quarterback rating, which makes no sense. But QBR, you hold someone to 27.8 QBR, and that means a quarterback who plays with that stat line on that level in that situation only wins 27.8% of the time. And then you look at the team stats. The Giants, 8.0 yards per play. I don't know the last time the Giants averaged 8 yards per play in a game. Carolina was only 5.2. Like, this was a really good offensive Giants showing, and then, yeah, there were a couple of mistakes later that cost them, and, of course, a fluky field goal. But we look at that, but when you get back to the offense, man, it was good. Manning had 10 passes that went 16 or more air yards. And over the first 4 weeks, he only had 19. Whatever was going on with the offense, I think they realized it, and it looks like they might have fixed some problem. Manning had 2.72 seconds per throw on average. That was around what he was doing in weeks 2 and 3. So it's not that much different there. So I think they figured out how to get some deep shots. I think they maybe talked Eli into it's okay to take some deep shots and maybe not be afraid of the interceptions. And he threw 2 interceptions that looked maybe backbreaking at the time, but the way the game was going, they were able to bounce back. So, you know, being so risk averse isn't bad because he took some of those risks. The 2 interceptions he threw were pretty bad. I'm not sure if those were, you know, taking risks or just pretty bad throws and decisions. But there's definitely something good to take away from this offense, I think.
Yeah, for the first time this year, they didn't play to not lose, which I think is the correct number of negatives to get my point across.
Yeah, they played to win instead of playing to not lose. And
exactly.
Those are very different ideas there. They sound like they're the same thing, but they're not. Yeah. Playing to win is being a little more aggressive and physically, like, just trying to up your win probability, doing all you can to actually win the game. Playing not to lose is kind of pushing it off, not always taking the most aggressive thing, trying to be safe. But yeah, for the first time, I think the Giants did play to win.
They did. Yeah. Now, there has to be a balance between the way they played against the Panthers and the way they played against Houston, where Eli took a lot of safe throws. He completed 86% of his passes, but never really looked beyond like 7 yards down the field. Although he did average 10 yards per completion, the air yards were much lower. So they've got to find, I think, the balance there. And if they do, with the guys they've got, the offense has a chance to be really dangerous, at least through the air.
Right, and completing 61% of your passes is okay when you're averaging 9.1 yards per attempt.
Yeah.
Completing 80% of your passes is worthless when you're averaging 5.5 yards per attempt.
Yeah. Basically, we got Eli Classic today. We got Eli from 2010, 2011, 2012. 5-7 step drops. If there happens to be a rusher, just kind of sidestep him a little bit. Do that weird, awkward, goofy Eli Manning flow in the pocket thing that he does, which kind of still looks like a baby horse on ice skates. And throw the ball down the field. Give your playmakers a chance to make a play. And you know what? It might come up in an interception, but you do it anyway.
I think the best case for that Eli Classic is he did have those 2 interceptions that just made you think, like, what are you doing? But that's okay when you're taking shots and the shots are working.
And when they ran the ball like they didn't, you have to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's another thing that I think we can get into in a little bit. It's a good thing the passing game was working, and it really was. Beckham had 14 targets. That's good. You should be throwing to Odell Beckham all the time. Sterling Shepard was second on the team with 7 targets. That's a fine split. I'm okay with that. On Beckham's 14 targets, 8 receptions, 131 yards, and the touchdown. He was close to that second touchdown that it was in the end zone. It was maybe a little underthrown. James Bradbury made a great play on it. If you're looking at that play, please do not call it a Beckham drop. It was not. That was a great play by Bradbury to get his arm in there and rip that ball out.
Yeah, and I'm not going to ding Eli on the throw either, because it looked like he had to drop it over a defender who was underneath, and that's a tricky window to hit. That was just a great play by the defender. They make them sometimes.
Yeah, they do, and especially Bradbury. We talked about him on the preview show. He's good, man. And even on the actual touchdown catch, the one Beckham did catch, Bradbury was right there again.
Yeah, that was just a phenomenal throw and a phenomenal catch.
Yeah. So I think we see when they do take some shots downfield, it's going to work. And it looked like early in the game, that might not be the case. And it was kind of a case of, if you need something done right, you do it yourself. Because Odell Beckham had a 57-yard pass to Saquon Barkley in this game for the Giants' first touchdown. And I think we sometimes see wide receivers making throws, and they're kind of wide open. They have a lot of space. This was a legit throw from Odell Beckham. All the way across the field, he had a guy in his face. Like, this was a good throw.
Yeah, to what, 24, 25 air yards, but throwing from the left sideline all the way over to the right sideline. And he hit Barkley in the hands. I mean, at one point I was ready to pretty much just cut Eli and play Odell, Barkley, and Gallman in the backfield all the time. They could just take turns either handing them off or throwing to each other.
Yeah, run some type of option. I would be so into that. That would be actually so much fun to watch in a vacuum, even though no one would ever do that in the NFL. But yeah, that was big. It was on 2nd and 18. That was huge play, huge swing, although huge swings in the first half turned out to not really matter because all the swings happened in the second half.
I like to think that it put them in position to have that crazy back and forth second half.
Sure, yeah, because if they don't connect there and they run some, you know, generic play on 2nd and 18 and they don't make it, then
they'd have their third down check down and then punt.
Yep, and then Carolina's probably taking over from there, which is honestly what it looked like at that point. That did give them a little bit of life. But when we look into that, so Barkley was the recipient on that 57-yard catch. He had the 15-yard catch and score that we already talked about. Man, outside of that, only 2 catches for 9 yards. That seems weird to me.
It does. I think that's where the balance needs to come in between the Eli Classic and the Houston game. Yeah, we've both been wanting to see this so much. How about some wheel routes for Barkley? Just him for a little 5-7 yard wheel route or an angle route.
Yeah, it's something just to an actual route to get him the ball quick. He doesn't just have to be the check down option. And it's weird also that they didn't get him more touches in the passing game, especially when the run game struggled. He had like those
there
two big runs.
It was a run game?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. I mean, it was a Saquon Barkley type of day. Yeah. A lot of stuffs, a lot of big runs, but only a 20% success rate. That's awful. And when you have a success rate like that, every time you call a run, you're probably putting yourself behind.
I look at it this way. He had runs of 30 and 20 yards and finished with 48 yards rushing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that's not great. They still called 15 runs. They were still running on first down. It's something they really need to figure out. And also, like, it's I don't think you're giving up on the run game. And also, I don't think giving up on the run game is necessarily a bad thing, especially when it's not working. But when you're giving Barkley some swing routes or some short routes, but actually letting him get down the field a little bit, you're still giving that guy the ball. And that's what you drafted him for.
Yeah,
you didn't draft Barkley second overall to have him lose 2 yards running up the middle on first down.
No, you drafted him to get him out into space with the ball in his hands, one way or the other, whether you handed it to him in the backfield or whether you threw it to him or if it's a screen pass or whatever, and then let him do what he does. Put those ridiculous legs and 4.4 speed to use.
When you think about it, he makes the first defender miss almost all the time. It's way better to make that defender miss past the line of scrimmage than it is 4 yards behind it. That's pretty simple math, I think.
Well, I guess you'd think so, but
one step at a time. We got them throwing downfield. Maybe next week it'll be downfield and getting Barkley involved a little more in the passing game. Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll take baby steps.
Yes.
We'll be happy with the downfield passes for now.
Maybe the baby steps could come a little bit quicker because next game's Thursday.
Yeah, that's coming up pretty quickly.
Well, maybe they won't have to worry about overthinking it and can just go with what they have seen work so far. Why don't we turn to the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I think we can do that. We spend a lot of time talking about the offense on
which
this
it
show,
earned
but
it.
Yeah, and again, it matters a little more, to be honest. I think when Football Outsiders does their team efficiency and they put it together, they say, I think football is 4 parts offense, 3 parts defense, and 2 parts special teams. So when you kind of look at it that way, offense does matter a little more, which is why we kind of talk about it a little more.
I'd say that's why quarterbacks get paid what they're paid and why the NFL rulebook looks the way it does.
Yeah, but if we do get to the defensive side of the ball here, for the most part, I think they played pretty well. Again, holding Newton to 6.8 yards per attempt, held him to 8 carries for 29 yards. That's only 3.6 yards per carry average. He only had a long and 9. They kind of figured out the read option, which was nice. McCaffrey went 17 times for 58 yards. He didn't really beat them until that touchdown at the end, which was just a really good design. They had a 2x2 on each side with McCaffrey on the left. When the two wide receivers on the left went slants inside, that left the whole sideline open for McCaffrey. But that was really the only play McCaffrey killed them on. So they were able to hold the two guys we were worried about. They were able to hold them to not do a lot of damage.
Yeah, and them figuring out the read option was really nice to see. I know I thought, and I'm pretty sure you thought as well, it was probably going to kill them, just based on the evidence we had seen so far. And they held the best rush offense for the second time this season. They held the best rush offense in the NFL to their worst game so far. McCaffrey had his second worst day running the ball and his lowest yards per carry of the season so far. He didn't kill them in the passing game. Defense was pretty good. I mean, it would have been nice for them to actually get off the field that one last time, but I think they're kind of missing Olivier Vernon there.
Yeah, that's something that probably could have worked. So only 3 quarterback hits in this game, 1 by Connor Barwin, 1 by B.W. Webb, 1 by Landon Collins. So that's 3 quarterback hits and 2 by defensive backs. That's not going to work.
That's less than ideal.
I mean, we know Betcher is aggressive with sending those defensive backs, but you don't want 2 of your 3 quarterback hits coming from guys in the secondary. But also, like, it kind of looked like it could have gotten away from them in the run game too, because even when they were stopping Newton, he was falling forward through guys for like another 4 yards.
Yeah, him
because he's a gigantic human being.
yeah, him running over Mario Edwards was probably not the best look, but yeah, you can't forgive it because it is Cam Newton.
Yeah, and Mario Edwards is not a small man either.
No, no. The lack of a pass rush, you can sort of understand because you have to play contain on Cam Newton. You can't just pin your ears back every play because then he will just murderize you on scrambles. But looking at next-gen stats, not one of the Giants' rushers got even 2 league average distance away from him.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of pass rush. He threw 35 times, and I don't think he was under pressure a lot. There were some of those blitzes that got through, but nothing that really would have worried him. They had the one sack from Connor Barwin, but you know that was it.
Yeah, and their line is not a great pass protecting offensive line. They had given up 1 less sack than the Giants had given up. And that's with a mobile quarterback back there and not Eli Manning.
Yeah, I think that Trey Turner just made as many plays in the backfield for the Panthers as the Giants did. I'm just remembering the one where he just like turned around and pancaked Christian McCaffrey, who had the ball. I mean, the Giants have their struggles on the offensive line, but they haven't had a guard tackle their own running back in the backfield yet this season. So,
although at one point I thought I saw Nate Solder tackle Eli, but the camera moved away quick.
Yeah, that might have been the case. Who knows? But I think the defense was all right for most of the game, and then it came late.
Had that long catch and run by DJ Moore on that last drive.
Yeah, DJ Moore had that. I think where it really started to turn was that fourth down where the hold was called. That was big. That was the hold that gave him the first down, and then took another 15-yard penalty by bumping into a referee.
Yeah. Then, of course, we had the fourth down where they ran inside zone with Christian McCaffrey, which I don't hate in a vacuum, but in that circumstance, that's a questionable call. And then the questionable spot, I suppose we could say.
Yeah, I think definitely a questionable spot, but you know, it happens. And
it does.
And I think if you were a defense at that point on that final drive with no timeouts left and you've just forced the team to kick a 63-yard field goal, I think you're saying, okay, we did a pretty good job. That Dion penalty was big, and then there were a couple other penalties that came up real big.
We have to talk about the Landon Collins one.
Landon Collins, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I've watched that play so many times. I think if you're going to make a call there, it's probably on Michael Thomas, who actually kind of did lead with his head. But even that would be a bad call. Calling it on Collins is just, I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, he was in front of Funchess, and if there was any helmet-to-helmet contact, it was Funchess falling forwards and hitting the back of Collins's helmet.
Right, yeah.
I think that was just a reaction. We saw three defenders, one receiver. It looked like a big hit. We're throwing the flag.
Yeah, I think they do that a lot, where if it looks bad, they're going to throw a flag. But, man, in reality...
And he was only down on the ground because he cramped up. He went back for an IV.
Right, yeah, there was not a lot there, but and I know a lot of Giants players have already come out talking about the officiating. I know that was an issue again last week, where Giants players have been talking about officiating. You don't want to feel like the refs are taking the game out of your hands. But again, there were some other stops the Giants could have had where penalties like that wouldn't have been that big of a deal. So there's no way I'm putting this on the referees, because there's just so many other plays that could have been stopped.
There could have. There definitely could have. But at the same time, the NFL has to do something about the officiating. It is just, it is hurting their product. I mean, you have the two just terrible ones on Clay Matthews. There was another one where the defender just hugged the quarterback and was called for roughing. That was ridiculous. It's a problem just independent of this game.
Yeah, I think when you see league-wide, there's definitely some questionable calls, and they're still going back and forth with rules and whatnot and figuring out the best ways to do that. I think they've kind of changed the roughing the passer a little bit, even though they said they didn't, but those have already been called less, like, the past 2 weeks. Maybe they start calling these crazy leading with the helmet plays a little differently. You would hope so. Like, you just don't want to see a play like what the Giants got called on be a penalty. I'm all for making the game safer and taking big, bad hits out of the game. I mean, I've suffered a couple concussions that have definitely changed the way I do things in life, so I'm all about head safety, but I think you gotta have some common sense there also.
Yeah, maybe those penalties should be automatic booth reviews. It's real hard to legislate and determine intent, but when things like that happen, where looking at it, it's real hard to look at it and say, where was the penalty? Who did anything wrong? And that would slow the game down, but maybe an extra 30 seconds to make sure you get the call right. Maybe that's worth it.
Maybe. I don't know. It's definitely something the NFL has to work on. It's something they kind of are working on. I don't know. It was a bad penalty. There's definitely been some bad penalties against the Giants over the past couple weeks, so I can see where a lot of frustration would come from. Yeah.
At least we got to see angry Shurmur.
I think that's one more thing we can talk about. If you haven't seen Pat Shurmur's press conference after this game, and I think you need to understand Pat Shurmur typically to really get this, Pat Shurmur shows very little emotion, to the point where his press conferences are almost pointless because he gives the most cliched answers. He doesn't dwell on anything. He doesn't really expand on anything. But man, after this game, I think the Giants have this press conference video up. Man, he was fired up. He was fired up about the penalties. He was fired up talking about Beckham, but also saying like that was something that was handled in the locker room and is not going to be a problem going forward. He was fired up and he showed some emotion, and that was...
It was refreshing. It was good to see.
Yeah, it was refreshing to see.
Maybe that's what the team needs. Yeah, the second half, they came out and played with some fire. They played with heart. Maybe they got a preview of Angry Shurmur at halftime. Hopefully they can keep it.
They definitely got a tough test. This is a crushing way to lose a game and drop to 1-4. And now you have to have a quick turnaround for a Thursday night game with the Eagles coming in. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing in the vacuum, turning around just a Sunday game to a Thursday game, especially divisional opponent who's probably pretty good. So the Giants are going to have to do that, and that's not going to be easy, and they're going to have to put this game behind them very quickly.
Yeah, they definitely will. I suppose the good news is that Philly lost as well, so they're still only one win up on them. The Giants are in the basement, but the basement's not all that deep, so at least there's that.
Yeah, if you want to be a glass half full type of person, that's one way to look at it. I'm not sure.
What are you talking about? The glass is always full. It's just has changing ratios of air and water.
Whoa, there we go. That is the most optimistic look at describing what the Giants could be facing that you'll probably hear.
I have to say, this is probably the best I've felt about the team after a loss in a long time. Maybe just because of how that fourth quarter went, but seeing them actually come out and attack on offense and throw the ball down the field and, you know, hold a good Panthers offense to, you know, the defense played well against a good Panthers offense. Yeah, so there's things to feel good about in a heartbreaking loss.
Yeah, again, it's weird that we're saying the defense played well when they gave up 33 points.
Although, actually, 26.
Yeah, 26 because of special teams touchdown. So, but yeah, I don't think it's crazy to say, I'm not going to use the phrase moral victory. There are no moral victories, but I think you can be more optimistic about what this team can look like, looking at what the offense did. I think that's fair. And I think we're going to see really quickly when they play Philly on Thursday, whether this is something that's going to carry over or if it was just one kind of game where they were super fired up and they let it fly. And but then if it goes back to what it was. So I think the Philly game is probably going to be really important in seeing how that carries out for the rest of the season.
Definitely. That, I think, will be the test. I don't think we should really think about playoffs at this point. We probably should never have thought about playoffs.
Oh, no, definitely.
But yes.
Definitely not.
But just seeing whether or not they can more or less carry this feeling through, build on this loss and the things they did well, maybe find that offensive balance, maybe get Olivier Vernon back. He has practiced lately. I believe he was actually a full participant in practice before he was ruled out. So I wonder if they might not have been targeting this week all along.
I'm not sure. I think he was limited, and then he didn't practice the following day. But I don't know. But he
That's right. Yeah. Eli Apple was the full participant, and then yes.
Yeah. So Vernon was limited, and then there was the following day where he didn't practice. Whether that's a setback or not, or they didn't want to rush him for a Sunday game, knowing he could rest for a couple of days for a Thursday game, because it's not going to be a quick turnaround for him. He has a couple more days to rest. It's going to be a quick turnaround for the rest of this team, but he's had a couple days to rest, and maybe he'll be ready for Philly, and maybe they're, after they saw what he was doing, they wanted to target that Philly game. That's definitely possible. No, I think a lot probably rides on what they're able to do going into this Philly game. But we're going to, you know, preview that in probably like what, a day or so. Like it's a quick turnaround for us too, because we have to knock out a preview episode before that game. Game happens. But before we do that, I think we can we put a cap on this game. Let's go back to four ups and four downs. That was something we wanted to do, and we didn't really feel like we could do after the New Orleans game, because we were weren't sure if we could find four ups. But I think we can do that in this game. So we'll do four ups, four downs, and let's start with your first up.
I gotta give it to Saquon Barkley. You know, like we said before, the running game has been Saquon Barkley. They completely rebuilt this offensive line, you know, vowing to get back to hard-nosed New York Giants football, running the ball, playing great defense. And the end result has been, even with a massive upgrade at running back, they're averaging fewer yards per carry, really, than they were with last year's offensive line and Orleans Darkwood carrying the ball, while running the ball something like six fewer times per game. So the running game has been Saquon Barkley making that first, second, third guy miss, running away from the fourth, then maybe being pushed out of bounds by the free safety, and then him in the passing game, and that great touchdown catch from Odell, and then the leap on that go-ahead touchdown from Eli. Right now, he's my big up. Oh, and him getting close to the record books and being mentioned with Kareem Hunt's rookie season last year and Adrian Peterson, who's pretty good.
Yeah, those are the players to start their careers with 5 games of 100 yards from scrimmage. But I mean, my counter to that is, like, that's super cool, and it's just one of those things where if you were against Barkley being drafted, it was not because of Barkley. It was just because if the offense wasn't, and the rest of the team wasn't good enough around him, it just wouldn't really matter. And that's kind of what we're seeing. Five straight games of 100 yards from scrimmage, and the Giants are 1-4.
Mm-hmm.
So with that super fun note off of your up, I'll go to my first up and our second, just the offense throwing deep. That was fun to see. Again, Manning had 10 passes in this game that went 16 or more yards in the air. He had 19 of them in the first 4 weeks. So it's possible that this offense can do that. And so that's something hopefully that will carry on going forward.
Yeah, definitely. And my second up, third overall, the run defense. Now, like I said, they held Christian McCaffrey to his least efficient game of the year. They actually managed to figure out the read option enough to keep Cam Newton from just destroying them on the ground. And overall, they held the Panthers to 118 yards on the ground, which is a lot until you realize they had been averaging 166. So, you know, I have to give it up to the run defense. They did their job.
Yeah, Carolina was the number one rushing in DVOA coming into this game. They were able to do what they wanted, and the Giants did slow them down. And they kind of slowed down the passing game, too. There were just, like, a couple of big plays that happened. And I think that's kind of been the story of the defense so far. Overall, it's been pretty good. And then there's a play or two that just breaks, and that's what really gets them. But to stick with the defense, my last up here, I think if we stick on the defensive side here, is the late aggressiveness on defense. You know, technically it didn't work because Carolina did kick that field goal to win the game, as improbable as that was. But Carolina's first play on that drive, the Giants lined up and B.W. Webb had a cornerback blitz from the slot, and he got a hit on Cam Newton. And that was cool to see on a late game drive with the opposing offense trying to score, and the Giants stayed aggressive. How many times have we watched the Giants in that situation play prevent, not give any pressure, let the offense just catch something in front of them and gain a chunk of yards and lose that way? So yeah, I'm all for the process there. The result did not turn out what you want, but I'm all for the process of still being aggressive in that situation, playing to what your defense is going to do the rest of the game. So I'm real happy to see that.
Oh, definitely. And on that play, Michael Thomas almost came up with the interception on it. So that could have worked out really well.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, that was really great to see. I completely agree there.
Cool. So let's shift to downs.
I'll say that leads right into my down, however, and that was the tackling, the defense's tackling, especially in the first half. In fact, I'm not sure you could even call it tackling. The attempted hits on the Panthers' offensive players that just did not work at all. I mean, when you're seeing offensive players, guys who aren't big, breaking 2, 3, 4 tackles on one play, that's just embarrassing for a defense.
Yeah, you can understand that against the Cam Newton runs, which we can give those a pass. But yeah, some of those other plays just bad. It's not the bad form, just bad angles sometimes. Just letting guys go through. Curtis Riley has not been great there. Quietly, Alec Ogletree has not been great in that position. He's like tied for third in the league with missed tackles per Sports Info Solutions charting. He's missing a tackle on like 25% of his attempts, which is not good. I don't have the numbers in front of me from this week, but yeah, just something the defense as a whole can definitely work on.
Yeah, even Landon Collins struggled with it in the first half. And you know, not used to calling him out for his tackling, but first half it sucked. And the Giants made Curtis Samuel look like Marshawn Lynch, and that's just not good.
Yeah, so that play especially.
Yeah. So how about we get to your down?
Mine is it's a couple of things rolled into one, but I'm just going to go with the rushing success rate in this game for the Giants, which was absolutely terrible. So by by expected points added success rate, which just kind of takes what an offense is expected to do on a given play, and however the play turns out, those are the expected points added. So the Giants had 3 successful runs on Barkley's 15 attempts, so that's a 20% success rate. That is bad. I don't think you have to be very good at math to know that is bad. So, no. But like we kind of said before, when you have the run game struggling like that, it's not a bad thing to stop running and give Barkley some more looks in the passing game. It's the same thing. You're giving the same player the ball. Just let him do a little more with it, and don't force the run when it's happening. Like we said, it was a lot of runs into the middle of the line with either no yards or a loss of yards. That's just, it's putting you back more than it's going to help you later.
Definitely. The one time I actually wanted them to run the ball was Eli's first interception, when I think we decided that the Giants actually ran an RPO and the Panthers actually defended it really well. They knew what was coming, and it just looked like one of those situations where Eli was just kind of rushing, didn't see the defense develop the way he probably should have. And that one, it would have been a good call to just give the ball to Barkley.
Yeah, if it was an RPO, I mean, the Giants, it could have just been the play action. The Giants were run blocking on the play. Will Hernandez pulled there. But if that was just a pre-snap read where they're reading the box and the amount of defenders, Carolina had like 7 guys on the line. There was an 8th right behind him with Luke Kuechly, who wasn't on the line but was playing really close. So Eli pulled the ball back, and one of those guys who was up against the line was Mike Adams, who eventually was the one who dropped back and intercepted the pass to Beckham. So yeah, I don't fault him for the read, but knowing what was happening and then reading the defense post-snap is just as important. So yeah, that was definitely something Eli probably wishes he could have back, although just handing the ball off probably wouldn't have been successful just from the amount of people that were in the box.
No, but at least they would have lived to play another down.
Right. Go on to your third down.
My final down, just the boneheaded penalties. Some of them, like the Landon Collins penalty, that I'm not including that, but Kareem Martin getting encroachment on the punt attempt, which kept the Carolina drive alive, holding, keeping their drive alive.
The roughing the passer when there was already a hold on BJ Hill to offset. Yeah.
And, you know, on the Giants, Russell Shepard getting a false start. Their offense is not that good. That's something Ed harped on this week, is how many plays they went backwards, and their offense just is not good enough or consistently good enough to overcome that. And they can't beat themselves and help the other team. They just can't do that.
Yeah. It's a lot of just small, dumb things that probably could easily be cleaned up. Speaking of really dumb things, we're going to get to the fourth down here. And that's just the Giants special teams. No matter what they do at returner, something terrible happens. You know, Odell Beckham was back as a punt returner. He had nice returns, but then he had, man, that one, it wasn't even a return in the second quarter. He, I guess, was trying to get out of the way. He was trying to push the
defender away,
out of the way, the ball get into the end zone. But the ball went off his leg and did go into the end zone. It ended up being a Carolina touchdown. That was another thing in Pat Shermer's press conference. He didn't sound too upset with that. He said Beckham was trying to get out of the way. So, I mean, I don't know, but man, that's another bad special teams play for this team that has just years
too many of
bad special teams plays. So with that, I think we can end it there. I'm not sure if we completely figured out what happened in this game or why.
I'm not sure we ever will.
This game happened, but there we go. I mean, a crazy game. That's all we can say about that. there's going to be a lot of content on Big Blue View over the next 2 days.
Yep. When short turnaround.
It's gonna yeah. Be short furious. Turnaround. We're going to be writing about the Eagles very soon. So that's it for this podcast. If you liked it, please rate and review. That helps a lot. Please do that if you haven't. If you haven't subscribed to us yet and are listening to this somehow, thank you for listening. Also, please subscribe. You can do that anywhere you find podcasts. We're going to be back very soon. That's what happens with these Thursday games. We'll probably be back on like Wednesday, which means Chris and I have to do another podcast in like a day. So we'll be back soon to preview Giants and Eagles at MetLife Stadium Thursday night. So we'll be back with that soon. So thanks for hanging out, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hello, you're listening to Simone de Rochefort, one of the hosts of The Polygon Show. It's a show all about the video games that you'll never have time to play, brought to you by four friends who are just as passionate about food, soft drinks, and TV shows as we are about video games. Every Friday, we bring you a new hour of personal stories, like how we found the best way to play Yakuza 0, or even what happens when you play so much Zelda that you hurt your hands and can't play games anymore. Above all, we just have a really good time talking about the games that we love. Check out the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. You can also find us at Polygon Show on Twitter and send a tweet to say hi. Thanks for listening.